Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Okay, so I feel like I should address this, but I am not returning to The Biggest Loser. And I think if you saw any portion of last season, you won't really have a question as to why. But I wanted to really clear up one thing. And I think of The Biggest Loser very much as like a dysfunctional marriage that I have with the show.
Right.
It's an extremely dysfunctional marriage. And I think of the audience as the children of that marriage. And I've noticed in the past when I haven't been on the show, the audience or the children of this marriage, my perception is that they feel, I think I'm too good for the show. I've walked out on Dad. I've abandoned them. And I want to be really clear that that is not what this is about. I don't think I'm too good for the show. The audience means more to me and has been, you know, other than my own family, having the tremendous honor and pleasure of being a part of each and every fan's journey towards wellness that was a Biggest Loser fan, is one of the greatest highlights and honors of my life. It's kind of like, again, with a dysfunctional marriage, you walk away with beautiful children. Like, I walk away with this wonderful career and these incredible, this great audience. But there are times when that marriage is just not working. And there have been very fundamental differences. I remember that Drew Barrymore movie as a kid, Irreconcilable Differences. Mm. There are irreconcilable differences that I have had from season one on that show. And I want you to know that if you are a fan of that show and you feel that I have abandoned you or abandoned the show or didn't fight or didn't try, that isn't the case. I did, and I have fought relentlessly to try to make it something that I thought was positive and healthy for me and my family and positive and healthy for the contestants on the show.
Right.
Unfortunately, there are just very significant differences of opinion about how all of that needs to go down. And so I just wanted to get that out there. Because I really do think that people, the perception over the years has been that I think I'm too good for it. or I'm walking out on it, or I'm abandoning it. And that if I could only, you know, and I don't want to air, I also don't want to air dirty laundry, because it's also like, you know, just like the kids don't want to hear bad things about their mom or their dad, you know, I don't want to sour something that I think has been so special for so many. But I feel like, you know, when the mom goes and talks to the kid and just said, you know, your dad and I just cannot be together. Yeah. We cannot be together. Is like, that's just kind of where it is. And I feel like there comes a point when you have to stand up for yourself and you have to stand up for what you think is right. Mm-hmm. And so that's really where it's at. And I want to say that I'm so grateful for everything that the show has given me.
Sure.
You know, the ability to do this podcast and have 1 million subscribers listening to it, you know, to be able to go on speaking tours and speak to 50,000 people in 8 weeks, to be able to write books and do DVDs and create things that I'm passionate about. And I am eternally grateful. And I look forward to continuing to do all those things on my terms.
Mm-hmm.
That's that.
Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play some really soft music. You know when I choose the stuff to go in between the segments?
No, I think you should pay something upbeat, man.
But that was very meaningful. Like, as we're going off into this, to the next segment, I just wanted
to talk to the audience. That's all. Like, the way that, you know, my mom talked to me when my parents got...
No, but you know what? I'm incredibly grateful that you are that transparent about saying, hey, this is what's happened. Like, you know what I mean?
I wish I could say more, but it would be inappropriate.
No,
and it would be too much information.
You don't need to.
You know what I mean? It would just be wrong. It's not necessary. And I think, honestly, if you've seen last season, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm still playing soft music.
All right, then. Okay. What the hell? Haven't already checked out naturebox.com, you have to. It's a subscription-based service that delivers you a box of delicious snacks every month. And these aren't just garbage snacks, they are the real deal. Each snack faces strict quality standards. There's no high fructose corn syrup, no hydrogenated oils, no artificial flavors or colors. Smart snacks that are nutritionist approved. And I mean, nothing gets by me. They come to my house every month. They're Jillian approved. They're awesome. Savory, sweet. You can customize your snacks, whatever your dietary needs might be. My personal favorite are the spicy Chinese crackers. You remember those Chinese cracker mixes as a kid that it was like all the yummy, but they were garbage. It was all processed junk and MSG. And these are all clean, all healthy, taste amazing. Or, if you want it all, you can get a rotating surprise box each month. Different sizes are available just for you. You can get your family, your coworkers on to better snacking. So, if this sounds tasty, you want to feel better, you want to eat better, you want to be healthier, go to naturebox.com/Jillian, and you'll get not 10, not 20, but 50% off your first box. That's huge. It's time to get snacks that you can feel good about. That's naturebox.com/Jillian. J-I-L-L-I-A-N. Check them out today. Oh, I know our new sponsor. I use this new sponsor to find our nanny. They're the bomb. Okay, moms and dads, I'm talking about care.com. I love it. This is the copy. If you're anything like me, you know how tough it can be to line up the right care for your whole family. Yeah, I get that very much, actually.
This is where care.com, and that's why I'm dropping my voice really low.
That's why, this is where care.com has you covered. These guys help families and caregivers connect in a reliable and easy way. That's care.com, and you can go there to find not just child care. Oh, I didn't even know this, but really any type of care that your family needs. Dog walkers?
Yeah.
Pet sitters?
Yeah.
Housekeepers, oh my God, and even help with adult and senior care. With summer coming soon, you can also search for, oh my gosh, cams and summer sitters? I gotta call Heidi. These can be stressful tasks. This is so true. And care.com makes the whole process easier. All you have to do is sign up. You can search or browse tons of local caregivers, check out detailed references, work history, background checks, and reviews. So whatever you're looking for, go to care.com/Jillian And for a limited time, they're giving my listeners 25% off a premium membership. Check it out. And I will say that I hired both my nanny and our babysitter off of care.com.
Wow.
Yeah, they're awesome. Addison and Hallie.
Very cool.
I know. So due to popular demand, because my mom has come on the show in the past and done some segments for us, we've been getting a lot of emails to the podcast email asking that my mom come on and do segments. So she is going to be doing one segment a month for us. Today marks our first segment, and I call her Dr. Mom because, Mom, you're a doctor of psychoanalysis, right? How does this work?
I have a doctorate of psychology in psychoanalysis.
I'm like, how's this whole PhD thing working out for you?
It's actually a PsyD.
A PsyD. It's a PsyD.
A PsyD. That's a doctor of psychology versus a doctor of philosophy.
Got it.
These credentials are very complicated and confusing.
All right. Mom, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to talk about shame.
Ooh.
Because
yes. Shame
is so pervasive and can be so crippling. I kind of think of shame, it's sort of toxic shame anyway, it's like cancer of the soul.
Oh, wow.
And so it's shame is pretty toxic shame now. It's pretty crippling, and so many people are so confused about it.
When you say cancer of the soul, why do you say that, Mom? That implies to me that it is impeding you from living in your truth, following your dreams, finding love?
That's putting it mildly.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, first of all, a lot of people blur the ideas of shame and guilt because they do cross over and they are blurry. And so sometimes people use them interchangeably and sometimes one leads to the other. But from a psychological perspective, let me just sort of define this. Shame is about how somebody feels about themselves.
Okay.
Whereas guilt is more about how they feel about their behavior.
Let's say that I slept with somebody that, that I don't like. It was a one-night stand. Am I ashamed or am I guilty?
Well, that depends on
Or is it if I've you. Hurt somebody, then I'm guilty? Like I've done something.
Exactly.
Okay.
It depends on your morals and your values. But it's very possibly that you may feel a sense of shame first because you feel like you did something that really betrayed your own value.
I got it. Shame
whereas,
is, okay, I get you.
Yeah, now, whereas guilt, usually guilt, it can be about, generally speaking, hurting somebody else. Like,
right.
Let's say if you didn't hurt the other person when you slept with somebody you didn't like. Well, then I would have to say, where's the guilt coming from? Because guilt is usually about we hurt somebody else.
Got it.
Shame is about I did something bad. But let me clarify something, honey, because what you just talked about, depending, again, on your values, it could be either healthy shame or unhealthy shame.
Okay.
Just like there's healthy guilt and unhealthy, healthy guilt and unhealthy guilt.
What's
so
healthy shame?
Right. So let's say your values prohibit sleeping with somebody just for sexual pleasure.
I got
especially
it.
Especially somebody you don't like, okay?
Okay.
So for you, that would be healthy shame. For you. For somebody else, it could be unhealthy shame. But the reason that for you it would be healthy shame is because you did something that went against your own moral compass.
I got it.
So healthy shame sort of alerts you to, I don't want to do that again.
Oh, wow. So it's like an internal compass.
Yeah.
And it kind of points out, like, what's going on with you that you would put yourself in a position of being destructive? Why are
exactly.
It allows you to look at, what the bigger, why are you punishing yourself in this way? Why did you put yourself in this position? So it's healthy because it's alerting you to work on something deeper and kind of guiding you back to your truth, so to speak.
That's one way of putting it, yeah.
Then what's unhealthy shame?
Okay. Unhealthy shame, honey, is something that is so much more pervasive and chronic, and it eats away at you. Unhealthy shame is about feeling inferior. It's not about an isolated incident. It's not about something you did that you goes against your values, that you internally disagree with. It's about you feeling that you're bad. Not that something you did was bad, but that you were bad. And therapists like to call unhealthy shame, we kind of call it toxic shame. Okay. And this is why I think of it as cancer of the soul. I mean, toxic shame underlies just about every psychological or psychosocial issue there is. It underlies addictions. It underlies depression. It underlies criminal behavior. It underlines poverty, which people can usually do very little about. Shame is so deep-rooted, it cripples one's self-esteem. Oh, it gets in the way of somebody being able to love others and love themselves, to be assertive. I mean,
so it fundamentally disempowers them. It chops them off at the knees, so to speak.
Absolutely. And that's a really important word you just used, honey, the word disempower.
Yeah.
Because toxic shame is something that usually develops when we were little, as a child. And generally speaking, toxic shame is always linked with feelings of powerlessness.
Oh.
Think about it. Think about it.
Please don't say that.
Wait, what are you laughing? I'm missing something.
I'm only laughing because here's the thing, though, Mom. I've always thought that I never struggled with shame until recently. I took that trip to India and I discovered a few things, but I think that was healthy shame now that we're having this conversation, because there were ways I would like to live my life differently. Mm-hmm. I realize now that there might be, I think in our culture, I never thought I was ashamed of being gay, but I realize, when I would hang out with Heidi and somebody would come up to us and say like, oh, are you guys sisters? I would go, oh, we're friends. Cause I just wouldn't want to. And Heidi was like, why do you say that? And I had to really look at what that was about. But I'd laugh because you and I talk about how powerless I used to feel as a kid growing up with Dad. But yet I'm empowered to change my life. So can you transcend this?
Okay, but
let's stay with where we're at. Let's stay with where you're at. So you're saying powerlessness growing up.
Yes.
And can you give me examples of that?
Yes. Okay. Well, let's go back to where it usually starts.
Okay.
Which is in childhood. And first of all, shame is universal. I mean, it just is universal because there are always going to be situations in which we are helpless, but the reason it starts in childhood is because think about being a little kid. I mean, you don't have the wherewithal physically, mentally, or emotionally to sort of take care of yourself and to kind of take a stand against the big, more powerful adults. I mean, it's just part and parcel of being a child.
Right.
There are times when appropriately, you need to be disciplined. Maybe you're having a tantrum and you want something, and it's appropriate for your parent to calmly, assertively take charge of that tantrum and, intervene. But in the midst of that tantrum, the child is feeling so angry and upset. And no matter how sensitive you might be, that child is going to feel the reality that they're little.
Right.
And in the face of the adult authority, they are powerless. But now that's a normal situation. Now let's take a child who's being humiliated or been humiliated, who's being ignored, who's being dismissed, minimized, threatened, exploited, abused. I could go on and on. And because that child is a child, they're unable to respond in an assertive way to take care of themselves. They're unable to respond with any sort of dignity. So that sense of feeling powerless is such a sense of shame. Can you sort of feel into that?
Yeah.
What that's like?
Is it also that somebody might be making you feel less than as well?
Oh, of course. Of course, that's the sense of being dismissed and minimized.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
When you are made to feel that you are inferior in some way, then that's shaming, especially when there isn't anything you can do about it. As an adult, especially if we already have a good enough sense of ourselves internally,
right,
as an adult, we can take a stand with that person. We can assert ourselves with that person.
Janice, you need to be listening. Are you listening to this about taking a stand with somebody and asserting?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because you don't do this, Janice. Okay, sorry, Mom. Go on.
You can walk away from the situation. You can protect yourself. But when this has happened to you as a child in a way that is really deeply toxically shaming, we're not talking now about healthy shame, then you grow up without really knowing the difference. It becomes a part of who you think you are. So you don't think you're deserving.
And this is what you mean when you talk about internalizing somebody else's issues and insecurities.
Yes. Well, opens it up to a whole other part of shame, which is something called multi-generational transmission of shame, trauma, guilt, whatever it is. When you have an adult, a parent, who has been toxically shamed as a child, even if that parent really wants to do something differently, but they haven't had, you know, enough therapy, or they haven't worked enough on themselves so that they have a clear understanding of where the shame comes from, of how it manifests, they are so likely, without realizing it, to unconsciously pass that on to their children.
Wow.
And so it goes. So healthy shame gives rise to humility.
Okay.
Unhealthy shame gives rise to humiliation.
Oh, wow. I totally understand that now. You know, here's what something I want to comment on. Multi-generational what?
Transmission. It's called multi-generational transmission. And generally speaking, therapists would say multi-generational transmission of trauma.
Right.
In other words, the traumas of the parents that haven't been resolved
get passed on to their kids, exactly. And they pass it on to their kids.
Right.
So, for example, dad always felt like he was unloved and the throwaway kid, and then he turned around and he didn't actually treat me like that, but he treated, you know, there were different things he did to each one of us. Oh wait, did we lose my mom? No.
No, I'm here.
Oh, sorry, mom. We heard it. Jake thought we lost you for a second.
We're good.
And then, you know, he would turn around to my little brother and be like, you know, you're Peter Pan. You're never going to grow up. You're never going to be a man. And then if Greg didn't resolve these issues, he would then turn around and do that to his son, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And, you know, let me give you, give you another sort of glaring example of somebody I worked with a long time ago who was really severely shamed as a child and sort of made to feel like nothing she could do was good enough and that she needed to get it right the first time or she was stupid. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting it mildly, and I'm being very careful here because of confidentiality.
Of course,
so I'm not giving a lot of details. But when this person grew up and became adult, she was in a position of authority with children. And guess what she did?
Yes. Oh my
Same
God.
Exact thing. And it would be something, it took a long time before she even began to really see what she was doing. But she would want to, quote, crack the whip on them the way the whip was cracked on her.
God.
Because there was all of this internalized, repressed anger.
Right.
And rage about it. But the thing is, it had never been processed. It had never been resolved. And so it was just festering inside. And it's like energy, honey. And energy will find a way out. It will find a way to get expressed.
This makes me want to cry because I see things with Lou. Like when I talk to Dr. Wilson, who's, for those of you listening, is my therapist that my mom referred me to. When I see myself do things with Lou of like the whole stiff upper lip, you're okay. You know, we've talked about it a little bit on the show and I've been working on it, but it's like, you're fine. Or Lou, you know, like if she eats, you know, like a mess everywhere, you know, and it's like, Lou, come on. I know you can do better. And it's like, it comes from, I looked at her, I was like, when did I become my father? When did this happen? Yeah. And I was like, why is Heidi my mom and I've become my dad with these expectations of her? And, it's fascinating to me. And it's like now I try to kind of, you know, I really work on like everything is, you know, praising the effort. Good job, Lou. Good job. And like, it's okay, you know. But like also trying to get her to like, it's okay to make mistakes, but let's look at the mistake. Let's try harder. But it is fascinating to me how I have seen all of those qualities that dad had coming out in me when I would have absolutely thought that would never happen.
Right. Because, honey, when you talk about stiff upper lip, basically that is minimizing her feelings. It's saying something's wrong with how you feel.
Right. That's what Dr. Wilson said. He said, I'm teaching her not to trust herself.
Exactly. And now this leads also to, you said, what can we do about it? And I'm going to tell you something.
Well, how, I want to know,
like,
Mom,
wait, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something you're probably not going to want to hear.
Oh, great. Thank you.
The way that you are really going to stop yourself from doing these things with Lou, yes, being alert and aware is important. You need to grieve and deal with your own rage and pain about your relationship with your father. That's the way to get to the wound that's causing you to do these things, because it is coming up from this wound inside of you. Remember I said energy will find its way?
Yeah.
Well, until you sort of neutralize that energy more, it's going to come out. Yeah. So until you neutralize that energy, you know, just being aware of it and trying to intervene in it, it's sort of like a Band-Aid.
How does somebody, okay, so then my first question would be, how does somebody identify if they're struggling with this?
Oh, boy, it's not that difficult. First of all, if you've got an issue like an eating disorder, depression, often panic issues, anxiety issues, addictions, substance abuse, all of these things, what's underlying it is a feeling of I'm not good enough. Again, we all have insecurities.
I say that about weight loss. I've always said that. People will say, what's the common thread? And I said self-worth.
Yes.
Lack of self-worth.
Shame. Yes.
Wow.
And again, we all have insecurities, and that's where you have to start teasing things out and making distinctions.
Okay.
We all have insecurities, and you need to, and that's another way that you heal shame, is first of all, you face it. You bring it out of hiding where it festers and gets infectious. You talk about it with people who are non-judgmental, compassionate. Mm-hmm. You explore it. You bring it out into the light of day. You begin to understand that you're human. And we're all going to make mistakes, sweetheart. You're going to make mistakes with Lou. I made mistakes with you. We're human. We make mistakes. But you don't want to make the kinds of toxic, chronic mistakes that really cause deep, long-term hurt or damage in others.
I think that...
So,
yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No. Go.
Well, you want? I mean, I just, you and I could just take off on this and go forever.
I know you have a patient, though, so I know you can. But
so yeah. Okay. What were you going to ask?
You know what I see people doing, and they're like, I didn't. You know, I had a perfect childhood. Nobody hit me. Nobody molested me. You know, we had money, and they presume that's all perfect, without ever understanding that, you know, that multi-generational transmission aspect of what you were talking about, where, you know, the shame of one generation puts the shame onto another generation, and they don't understand why they're so effed up, because the obvious things of physical abuse, sexual abuse, poverty were not there. And so they negate everything that they're feeling.
Exactly. And Jillian, honey, there's another thing I'd like to add to that. You're talking about families that have this appearance of, oh, it was perfect, we were happy, we had, that has nothing to do with emotional health and well-being. In fact, it is the most sort of crippling kind of shame, because it's so insidious. People come from families where they're extremely disengaged, where there's no warmth or connection. These kids can be beautifully dressed and well-fed and kept warm, but are there any I loved you? Are there any is there any sense of protection or nurturing or warmth? No, it's all about cutoff and criticism and isolation. And these children are devastated. They grow up and they are devastated, and they don't know why.
They don't know why. That's exactly it, Mom. I see it all the time, and they don't know why.
No.
And it
kills
me.
Honey, did you ever see a movie called Ordinary People?
Yeah, years. It was years, right? With Timothy Hutton?
Hutton, yes, and Mary Tyler Moore. Yes. And it's all about this family that on the surface looks so perfect. And, oh, my God, the dysfunction that's inside this family and how it devastates the family members and the children. I won't say more in case people want to watch it.
don't spoil the movie.
It's powerful.
So, Mom, we've touched on a little bit here, just the broad strokes of basically you know, how to identify it and how to begin to deal with it.
You know, talk about it, get help.
I was going to say, yeah, what would be, can you give me 3 steps? And then can you tell me if, I know your practice is relatively full, but can I give out your information in the event that like someone lives in California and wants to come see you? And we're for those of you listening, I've asked my mom to help me with a book about this, because on a broader subject about the psychology of why people are gaining weight, what is behind these addictions, what is behind that intrinsic self-worth. And it's something that we've just engaged in, but it will take some time for us to get that done. So I can't refer them to a book right now, but can you give me like 3 go-to steps, and can I give out your office line?
Yes. Okay. First of all, if people are really not functioning well, get into therapy. But here are 3 things.
Okay.
Self-care.
Right.
Well, I'm going to give you more than 3 things. Self-care.
Okay.
Attempting to be assertive. The problem is, you see, when somebody is shame-based, they can't be assertive.
Janice, this
so
is
this
you,
is why I say
dude.
Therapy. But reparation.
This is you, this assertive thing. Go on, Mom.
I know. When you feel like you have done something that you feel guilty or shameful about, make reparation to the other person or to yourself if you need to.
Yeah.
In other words, an apology to someone else that you've hurt, forgiveness and understanding of yourself.
Is that why make amends is one of the 12 steps, right?
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Being of service to others.
Right. Okay.
And taking your capabilities and talents and utilizing them, work, healthy work, accomplishments, and internalizing your accomplishments.
Which most people don't, though, Mom. That's why they come up to me and they say things like, you've saved my life. And it's become like a joke on the show, because I'm like, I haven't saved your life. I didn't even know you existed on the planet until 2 seconds ago. But because they're incapable of internalizing their own accomplishments, they say things like that. And, you know, I've seen many people that I've worked with be like, thanks, yes, I've saved your life. And I just want to punch them in the face, because I just think, you selfish, you know what? But
reading also, you know, again, if people can't afford therapy, there are therapy groups. There's low fee therapy.
Okay.
Because I really think if shame is something that, if the person isn't functioning well, if they're depressed, if they can't have healthy relationships, they need some sort of therapy. And there are ways to get into either low fee therapy or therapy groups, which can be great for shame-based individuals. But even reading, years ago, John Bradshaw wrote a wonderful book called Healing the Shame That Binds You. It was just a classic.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you can still get it at the library, or it might even be available still on Amazon. So educate yourself. And my light's on now.
Okay, you have to go. All right, wait. How, if somebody wants to reach you, if you're taking patients, how?
Okay, well, they should phone me on
310-207.
Uh-huh. 0079.
310-207-0079. Dr. Joanne McCarris, a.k.a. Dr. Mom.
I love you.
Love
you
too.
Later.
Thanks, Mom. Bye.
Bye, honey.
Oh, that stuff's heavy stuff, man. But it's fascinating how it does literally cripple people. It inhibits them from feeling worthy of being loved. And of course, when you can't feel worthy of allowing somebody to love you, you can't truly love somebody else. It inhibits them from going and pursuing their career goals because they don't feel worthy of them. It's everything she talked about with addictions. It's been the one common thread I've always seen with people that struggle with morbid obesity. And it's fascinating to me how no matter where you're at in your life, there is always some of that, man.
Mm-hmm.
Always some of it.
No, yeah. It's the you said it. They don't know why. We don't know why. It's just,
and it leaves you feeling like you're crazy. You're ungrateful.
Yeah. What's wrong with me?
How dare I? After all that, you know,
why did
my
I do
perfect
this?
Life. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You gotta start asserting yourself there, Manis. Don't think about asking for a raise though.
No. Don't go there.
You're not worth that. Just. Just to be clear.
You know what I love about you, Jillian, is whenever I need like just a little dose of reality.
Your body is not the only thing that you can and should keep healthy and fit with the right exercise. You can also work out your brain to help keep it at its best. And the best exercise for your brain can be found at Brain HQ. Brain HQ is an online training system with 26 exercises that hone your attention, your memory, your brain speed, and more, and they really work. And you know how I know? Because a host of researchers from institutions like the Mayo Clinic to Yale have studied them and shown real measurable benefits to the brain. I'm talking about 10 years of improvement in your memory. 10 years. That's huge. Plus, Brain HQ constantly adapts to your unique brain. So you train at the optimal level for you where you can make the most improvement. You can get a 10% discount on a Brain HQ subscription for finding out about it right here. You just go to brainhq.com/Jillian Michaels. Jillian Michaels, all one word. So I want you to start keeping your brain in great shape like you do with your body. Again, that's brainhq.com/Jillian Michaels. I'm going to get you a little membership, Manis. Sharpen you up.
All right, we are back. And Kelly, where are you calling from?
San Diego.
San Diego. So all the way from San Diego, California. Kelly's here to talk to you.
Hello, Kelly. What's going on?
Hi, Jillian. Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm really excited.
Gosh, no, it's our pleasure. What can we help out with?
Well, in a nutshell, I've been at my job for about 4 years, and
Wait a minute. Is this a career question?
This isn't a normal
this
call.
This is a career question.
No, hold on. Yeah. I don't know what outfit I need to put on.
You put on a...
Because the doctor wears glasses.
You have to wear a flats. You can't wear heels.
Well, let me put on my mental pantsuit. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay,
I don't know
perfect.
If that makes me really gay or really career-oriented.
I believe they're waiting for you at the dinosaur.
Right. Okay, I'm ready. Yes, how can I help you out with this?
So basically, more recently, I received a couple of awards at work.
Congrats.
And instead of feeling, and I initially was really excited and proud of them. And then I started feeling a lot of guilt and almost embarrassment of all the kind of congratulations and almost feeling undeserving of the awards. Which is kind of silly because I know logically that I deserve them. I just have been feeling a lot of anxiety about it, and I don't really know kind of how to work through that.
Okay. This is funny. We just did a whole segment with my mom, who's a psychoanalyst, about guilt and shame and how they're debilitating in our lives and where they come from and how we begin to manage them. And to be very clear, let's look at if you are feeling guilty or if you're feeling ashamed of it. So guilt is something that you feel you're doing to other people. Do you feel that your achievements are hurting other people, or are you feeling not worthy of the accomplishment, which is shame, a lack of self-worth? Or both, by the way.
No, I don't feel guilty. I guess that was the wrong word.
Okay.
Yeah, more in a weird way, undeserving.
Okay.
Like deep down, I feel undeserving, even though
I know that
I deserve it.
I cannot believe it. We literally just had my mom to talk about this, and she had a patient, or I would literally call her back and have her talk to you about this. But the career coach can handle this because I grew up with that woman for 40 years, so I think I know I can handle this. Don't worry. All right, so, sweetie, all kidding aside, let's really dig in here. Is this the first time in your life that you have ever achieved these kind of accolades?
To this level, yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And so you've freed yourself up to a certain extent to pursue your goals, the things you're passionate about, to go after the brass ring, so to speak. And now you're getting acknowledged for it. And in getting acknowledged for it, can you tell me what's going on? Is something happening with the people around you? Are you feeling tension with your coworkers? Or are you just feeling like you're a fraud and they don't know you're not good enough? Tell me exactly what's going on.
I think it's twofold. I think that there's a lot of people in the office that are really proud of me and have told me that I do deserve the award, so that feels good.
Okay.
But then there are kind of the other half that I feel as though are treating me differently and being a little bit a little bit shorter and kind of looking me up and down and judging me a little bit more.
Okay.
And kind of holding my work to a higher standard now.
Oh, there's expectation?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, definitely a lot of pressure at this point.
There's expectation. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And coupled with all of what's going on in the coworker dynamic, you're also feeling a little bit like a fraud, like you don't deserve it.
Kind of, yeah.
All right.
A little bit.
So let's look at this for a second. Can you tell me, can you go back a little bit? Let's go way back. Go back as far as you can remember and try to think back to some sort of accomplishment or achievement that you may have had as a kid, whether good grade,
sports day,
yeah, soccer player of the year, a trophy, something of that nature. Can you remember anything like that occurring in your childhood?
Yeah, definitely.
How did it play out in the family dynamic?
Both my parents have extremely high expectations for me, and they've always kept me to, you know, a high standard. So they definitely said, you know, great job, but there was always that, you know, the A minus should have been an A type of a mentality. But
okay.
When I did get, you know, some sort of accomplishment achieved, it was definitely praised for it, but it felt like I had to keep going at that same pace a little bit.
Okay. And then tell me what your concern and your fear was if you couldn't.
That I would make, you know, upset them, disappoint them, and
sure.
Kind of feel like an ultimate failure.
Okay, the ultimate failure. Oh, kind of feel, I love this, though. Kind of feel like the ultimate failure.
the way
that we, like, defend against, like, giggle. Okay, so, sweetheart, obviously, this dynamic is transcending into your professional life, where here we are, you've stepped out a little bit, you've stepped into the limelight, you're shining, and, you know, there are those that are like, good for you, you're shining, yay, and they notice you, and then there are those that you feel that historical expectation from, of like, okay, you know, well, what are you going to do next? Well, you better earn it. Well, how are you going to prove that you're worthy of it? Well, you know, if that's the case, then let's see what you're really made up of. And it sounds like you've got that exact same thing that you used to feel with your parents going on at the office.
Exactly.
And my concern, and you tell me if I'm on or off track here, is that, this is what I would see so often with my contestants, is they would use... I would always talk about being overweight because you want to be overweight. And what I meant by that is that for some reason, the weight was providing them with something they needed. And some of them would put the weight on and then say, see, I can't do it. So they didn't have to try and fail or run the risk of disappointing people because they, you know, see, I can't, you know, nobody wants me because I'm fat. So then it wasn't like they started dating and somebody left them. They couldn't date in the first place because they were fat, or they couldn't do this because they were fat, or they couldn't do that because they were fat. And it kept them from their fear of failure, and that failure being, in these particular instances, a massive disappointment to parents, and therefore, as you said, the ultimate failure, which makes you feel like if you're a failure and you're a disappointment, that people are going to separate or distance from us, which is the most primal fear that every human being experiences to one degree or another. So in this particular instance, my concern is that you might throw the brakes on and say, all right, I don't want these people I don't want to try again and then fail and then have them go, aha, aha, you aren't any good. You're a fraud. You've disappointed me, and then there'll be consequences. Do you feel that to a certain extent?
Mm-hmm. Actually, yes, a lot. That's exactly how I've been feeling the last few weeks, just almost
paralyzed.
Like dreading going to work and almost feeling paralyzed a little bit.
Honey. Okay. So here's the irony of this, right? We talk about this a lot in life. The more you act to avoid the things, or I'm sorry, a lot on the show, the more you act to avoid the things you fear, you will ultimately manifest them. So now watch how this plays out. So despite the fact that we're going to talk about this fear and if it's rational or irrational and how you should manage it, let's look at the fear quite literally, okay? You're afraid, you're going to go to work, you're going to be a disappointment, and then you're going to suffer the consequences of that. Now, you're afraid to go to work, and you're afraid to shine, which is ultimately going to say to people, hey, look, I knew she couldn't keep it up, and you're going to, and if there was somebody that was going to be disappointed or go, aha, I knew she wasn't capable, you're going to create that just by the behavior that you're engaging in. So you will bring about the worst possible scenario by trying to avoid that scenario. Let's look at the scenario, though. One of the ways that we manage fear is by looking at it. Here we go. You put yourself out there, and you fail. Tell me what's going to happen. Let's look at it literally, not psychologically, not what your psychological reality is of, okay, I'm going to disappoint my parents, and that's the most devastating thing for a child in the world. That is something that is your emotional reality, but it is not your literal reality at the office. And I want to walk you through this so that you can talk yourself through it when you're at work. Okay, this is what's happening for me emotionally, but this is not real here. So here we go. You go to work and you take on a project and you give it 100%, but it's not, you know, it's a B, or there were setbacks, or there are things that, you know, I shot to get, like my employees will say, I was trying to get 20 gyms to sign up this month for Body Shred and I got 10. And I look at them and go, okay, tell me, you know, what did you come up against? What happened? Talk to me. What do we need? How can we improve? Blah, blah, blah. But I'm not going, you idiot. You got 10, you know, I'll immediately say, all right, tell me what's going on, or what do we need to work on, or how do we improve? Talk to me. So there you are. You wanted 20 gyms for Body Shred or whatever it is your goal at the office, and you came in short. What happens? Tell me. Literally, not your fear. Tell me what will happen.
Well, worst case scenario is I'd have to sit down with my boss and kind of explain what happened and maybe identify best practices for the future. And I mean, I don't think I would get fired from, you know, messing up one project or anything, but.
Okay, so you won't get fired. How will your boss react?
Right. I think with my track record, she wouldn't be too upset. I think she would look at kind of the outside circumstances and I'd be able to work through it.
Okay.
Definitely.
So what you're experiencing, it sounds like with your boss, you're having this transference of disappointing her. In the way you were concerned with disappointing your parents. But if we look at this literally, she's not going to fire you. You're a dedicated, good employee. She's going to help you find a solution. She's not going to fire you. Okay? Now, so our worst case scenario here is that she says, okay, you know, I'm disappointed. I wish we were here, but we're not here. Why aren't we here? All right, let's work through it. And you work through it. Yes?
Right, yes.
Our best case scenario is you do a great job and she continues to be happy.
Yep.
Okay. Our third scenario is the what if you do nothing scenario, because you become paralyzed, afraid to go into work and afraid to try. Well, we know we're going to bring about the worst case scenario all over again, because then she's going to be disappointed. And if you don't continue to try, she's not going to see the effort there. And then you will actually jeopardize your position at the office. So that's the worst thing you can do, is nothing, is to allow yourself to be paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at these scenarios quite literally, which is what I want you to do, you only have one choice, which is forward momentum. Because if you don't continue on a forward path, then it shows lack of effort. That will be disappointment and possibly down the road, ground for termination. If you're not activating, if you're not trying, if you're not reaching and putting your best foot forward. And if you succeed, wonderful. If you don't succeed, you continue to work on it with her, and you know you have that room to grow and to learn and to continue attempting. So if we look at it like that, there is only one way forward, and that's to continue with your attempts at progress. Now, on a deeper level, to deal with what's happening for you emotionally, this is a much bigger thing, sweetheart, that has to deal with your parents and their expectations. So, Kelly, we'll refer back to when my mom talked about how generations of individuals pass on their issues to their kids. So, in the segment with my mom, she talked about how a parent will project the issues that they're dealing with and their traumas onto their child, and that if their child doesn't resolve it, they'll pass it on to their child, and so on. And so, for your parents, it's quite likely that the expectation of perfection, the stiff upper lip, the, you know, be the best of the best, was something that was put upon them, were probably defenses that their parents had developed against a different world at a different time. And while it's hard to look at these things, because we go, we don't want to look and be angry at our parents, or we feel guilty looking at these things, it's not about assigning blame, but it is about understanding where this is coming from and allowing you to look at it and go, wow, okay, this was the dynamic that was set up with my mom and my dad. Can I ask you, are your parents still alive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
Is it possible to engage in a conversation with them about this and just say, hey, you know, I've been thinking about back when I was a kid, about I had this terrible fear of disappointing you, and I really wanted to talk about that with you. Now, they may not give you, sweetie, the result that you want. They may not say, oh, honey, oh, my God, that breaks our heart. No, we love you anyway. But quite honestly, I feel like your ability to really air that out and say, I was so afraid to disappoint you and be the ultimate failure, that at the very least, they'll hear you and hopefully be mindful of it in the future. Talking in, as in, if you come to them about a relationship, a job thing, that they, or you can say, you guys are doing it again. You're doing it to me right now. This is the thing. Okay. To get it to stop. And in addition, there quite possibly could be some healing there where they'll look at this and go, oh my God, you know, we just wanted what was best for you. We never thought about how this was affecting you. I can't say how they'll react. I don't know. And I don't want you to go in expecting and get, you know, a limited response that will be devastating and disappointing. But what I can say is I think your ability to really air this out with them will be helpful. And your ability to take steps and begin asserting yourself, and you'll hear my mom talk about these certain steps that are necessary to take, but to take these steps one at a time and start owning those accomplishments and practicing asserting yourself and seeing that the world won't end when disappointments or setbacks occur is going to allow you to continue progressing. But when you become paralyzed with fear, what I want you to remember, okay, is that being paralyzed, doing nothing, is going to bring about the worst case scenario. So looking at that and knowing that reality, it sort of forces you to continue facing down those fears.
Definitely. That's so helpful. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And I would really love it if you do ultimately feel comfortable enough to have this conversation with them. I would love an update. I would love to see how it goes. And maybe we can sort of talk through that. And
I
just
would
remember,
love that. Definitely.
Don't attack. Not you did this to me and you said this to me and you said that to me. It's just, you know, I've been thinking I had this issue at work, and I realize it really stems back from this dynamic, and I'm afraid to disappoint you guys. And I have this fear of disappointing you and that I'll be a failure in your eyes, and it makes me afraid. And that way, I feel, not you, mm-hmm. you. Try it like that. Go in with zero expectation. Very softly, and then at the very least, you've established the groundwork, so if they start to do it in the future, you can say, see, this is what I'm talking about.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's great advice. Thank you so much, Jillian and Janice.
It's such an honor.
I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart. I really hope it helps.
It does.
Congratulations. You continue your awesome work.
All right. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you have a failure or setback, we all do. Don't forget that either.
Yeah, even Jillian does. I've seen it.
I got a stack of dead failures, dead bodies of failure. Are you kidding me? I have more failures than everybody put together in this room and on this call. So.
Okay, Kelly, take it easy.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, sweetheart. Oh, I guess now we have to end the show.
Now we got to end the
show. Now because we had my mom on and then Kelly, and now we got to end.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing for the rest of the day? There's not much left to it, but what are you doing?
Honestly, I have to continue sitting here recording other shows with you, but I'll pretend to go home to the kids. I'm going to go home to the kids. There I'm going. Bye! What are you doing the rest of the day? You know what I'm doing.
There's more to after we're finished here.
When I'm done with you. I'm so exhausted. I just go home and eyes roll back in my head. Spending an afternoon with McGinnis.
Oh, Lord. Okay, well, see you around, Jillian.
Bye, Janice. See you in the next segment.
Oh, If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.